Welcome to episode 122 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live April 19th, 2019. This is a show about Office 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss a topic or recent news and how it relates to you. Today, we want to help you save money in Azure. We provide some general guidance around ways you can optimize your Azure VM costs. So let's start saving.
Should we tell people this is how we get started every day?
By discussing how to start while I'm dying? Like, who's going to go first? And I mean, these are the complicated parts of a podcast, is who is going to kick things off?
Yes. 20 minutes later, I think we finally determined that it's going to be you with a cough.
All right. Well, that cough then signified our start. So away we go.
Away we go.
On your busted laptop.
On my busted laptop, which, no, I'm very disappointed. I've had this Surface laptop forever, and I really do like it as a device, but my screen has cracked in a very disconcerting way, and now I'm going to need to go buy a new laptop. Sad times. Wah, wah.
We do not need to introduce everybody to our whole discussion around which laptop you should buy and why.
No. Maybe when I get the new laptop, we'll figure that out.
Maybe you should just use a VM in Azure and an iPad.
I did get a keyboard for my iPad. And so, you know, Apple tells me that's a laptop. And I'm not going to lie, I have contemplated buying one of those Citrix X1 mice so that I can have a mouse and be able to use a mouse with my iPad as well, because that's totally a thing that you can do. I don't know if many people know that one, but it is possible.
I did not even know that one.
Yeah, you just got to use like things like Log Me In or like Jump Desktop as the client on the VM that you're remote to, or the machine you're remote to. But you can totally use a mouse with an iPad. It's just Apple doesn't have support in their core OS. So you can absolutely do that. But the thing that stops me from using the iPad day to day for my job is I need the full version of PowerPoint and Word. And the iOS versions are not the full versions. And even like remoting into another machine to get to it, it's not always a great experience. Like if I'm on a plane and, you know, flying someplace and I need access to that stuff, it's got to be the full version, which means Windows or Mac, and got to figure all that out.
Fair enough.
Someday I will buy that mouse and I'll show you how to use a mouse with your iPad.
Perfect. And I don't know that you'll ever actually get the full version on iOS. I wonder if they would do that, if you could do that.
I don't know. We have Windows on ARM. It could be a thing. Who knows? Someday, maybe kind of, sort of. But I live in PowerPoint, and not being able to change the animation order or have access to like simple things like animations or be able to do comments in PowerPoints, things like that, it's pretty much a deal breaker.
It is very evident that you live in PowerPoint with the massive slide decks you send me. And you're like, hey, Ben, let's go talk about this topic. Just jump down to slide 562 of the slide deck.
But there's a lot of nuggets in there. So, and today's isn't that bad because we're starting at slide 120 of 139. So it should be okay.
That's a manageable chunk.
I thought it'd be fun, speaking of today, we've talked a lot about governance and governance controls, and we've kind of skirted around a couple of questions with cloudy things. And one of the ones we've skirted around with Azure is cost. So I think talking about cost up front for any solution isn't the best way to go, right? We want to actually focus on what's the benefit to your business problem and, you know, maybe figure out actual like ROI around your business case before we go and talk about numbers for how much it costs to run a VM or a service or price out a solution. But it is one of those things that we need to think about. And I think about it as a governance construct in the cloud with Azure, AWS, GCP, whatever it happens to be. You should always be looking to optimize. And one of the best places to optimize and save money is with compute, specifically virtual machines, because CPU and RAM are kind of the most expensive things that sit out there. So I thought it'd be fun to talk about all of the different ways, or at least some of them, depending on how far we get through it, some of the different ways that you can save money on your virtual machines in Azure.
Yeah, and this one's interesting because I use a lot of VMs in Azure, doing SharePoint stuff. I have multiple SharePoint farms in Azure for various versions. When a client comes to me with a question, I am on a Mac. So when I do need Windows 10, because that is still a thing of needing Windows, especially when it comes to writing certain PowerShell scripts, I have a Windows 10 VM that I get as part of my MSDN that sits out in Azure. So I don't have a massive Azure bill every month, but my VMs do usually rack up a little bit more than what I have in credits. So saving money with Azure VMs in Azure is definitely a thing. And a lot of people I talk to still use VMs in Azure. It's kind of that first step. So there is a lot of savings to be had when you do your VMs right in Azure.
And I think another thing to keep in mind too, it's kind of the dirty little secret of the cloud, right? Is everything runs on servers in the background anyway, even if you're not doing VMs. Like if I'm doing maybe networking and I need hybrid connectivity between my environments, there's still compute and routers and other things that are bringing that together. So it's not just like VMs that we'll think about right sizing. It might be other stuff. It might be your disks. It could be how you allocate storage, like pay for what you use versus pay for what you provision. Could be the number of instances or the tier of a service that you run, things like that. And the other thing I want to say is everything that we're going to talk about is in addition to, and all of these drive towards developing cost-conscious cultures, particularly when it comes to the cloud, right? We've made this transition over to month-to-month spending with operational expenditure. And I'm a firm believer that if you are going to be on AWS or Azure, and you're going to allow other parts of your organization, like help them manage that platform, you just became a reseller for Azure, right? You became a solution provider, and you need to help your customers, whether that's, you know, your project teams, your departments, whatever it is within your organization, you need to help them develop a cost-conscious culture. So like you said, maybe you go over your credits a little bit every month, and you know you do that, and you're okay with that because that expectation has been set. So those that provision services for others in Azure, or even if you provision them for yourselves, you know, you need to make sure that you have visibility up front, that you still subscribe to principles of good management and ownership for your subscriptions, resources that go within them, all those kinds of things. You know, you still need to set and track budgets, and you need to understand your resource costs as it all comes together. That's really kind of what this conversation's about.
Sounds good. When it comes to email, Outlook and Office 365 are fantastic, but sometimes there are things you'd like to do that aren't implemented. Sperry Software creates Outlook add-ins and Office 365 services that fill in these gaps. For instance, there are Outlook add-ins to automatically print emails and/or attachments, save emails to PDF, send out recurring emails, or how about a warning when you're going to do a reply to all instead of a normal reply? Find these and many more email productivity solutions. Get started today by visiting www.sperrysoftware.com/cloudIT. Let's dive into it. The biggest cost savings, and this is one that I do a lot and I have seen it, is like you have said, the compute, the RAM, all of that costs money and is expensive. So naturally, what would be the best way to save money on that is to not use it. So if you don't need that VM, if you don't need to be consuming that CPU, that RAM, just turn off your VM. That is a huge cost savings. If I'm not working 24 hours a day, I am sleeping, I would say a third of it, but let's be honest, it's not usually a full third. I usually don't need my VMs while I'm sleeping, so I just turn them off. And there's some ways you can automate this. You can set up Azure to really help with your cost savings right there by just turning off your VM when you don't need it.
Yeah, that is definitely one of the first places that we look to. So there's a couple different ways that you can approach this one. There is native support within ARM itself, so within Azure Resource Manager, for stopping VMs. And when I say there's native support, I mean that it is baked into the compute resource providers. And that means that you can tell VMs to shut off just as part of the platform. And so if you think about maybe dev test workloads, right, that those go up and down every day. So that's certainly kind of transient. I think the other thing that maybe people forget is, you know, lots of organizations have these workloads that just don't need to run 24/7 every day of the month. They only need to run 24/7 sometimes. So if I think about like a financial process, right? You're in a business and, you know, you need to close your books at the end of the month. Typically that period of time, you know, those 7 to 10 days, whatever they are, when you need beefier compute and, you know, you're running your reports and churning everything together through your data warehouses, like, you know, turn the VMs on for just that time. But the other 20 days when you don't need them, go ahead and leave them off, and that's okay, and that's a good thing. So there's a couple different ways that you can approach this one. The first, like I said, is use the native support in ARM. So when you create a new virtual machine, whether it's Windows, Linux, whatever it is, create it through the portal, CLI, PowerShell, you will have an option to configure auto shutdown. And that comes with basically an on-off switch. If it is a scheduled shutdown, it's going to be a daily scheduled shutdown kind of thing. That's the way the ARM support works. You'll choose a time zone or leave it in UTC, the time you want to go down. And then you can choose if you want to send notifications before that virtual machine goes down. And that notification can be an email, or it can be calling a webhook, or it could be both. Like, that's totally a possibility as well. So if anybody does happen to turn that VM on during the day, it's just going to go down at the time it is scheduled for, unless you stop it in some other way, because you can do some interesting things with webhooks. You could have that call maybe a application inside of like Teams or Slack or something else and have it talk to you and say like, hey, it's 15 minutes before 6, we're getting ready to shut down. Are you still in the office and do you still want that VM to be on? And if you say yes, it just doesn't shut down. Things like that. So that is certainly a thing that you can do. The other thing that you could do is that's only auto shutdown. There's also, maybe we need to, for like that financial process that needs to happen for those 10 days, that needs to happen on a schedule, and we would really like to automate the start as well. Start's not built into ARM, so you need to come up with another solution for that. And probably the most kind of fit for use for production solution for auto stop and auto start is going to be Azure Automation. And, you know, in the free tier of Azure Automation, you get ever so many minutes of execution time per month for free inside there. So you go out to Azure Automation, you go into browse the gallery, and one of the first or second solutions in the gallery is just called Start Stop VMs. And it's just that. It's just a PowerShell workflow, which gets an array of VMs that is passed into it at runtime that you can go ahead and schedule stop start. And because that's PowerShell, maybe you change it. Maybe you want to shut down all the VMs in a subscription and start them back up at the same time. Maybe you want to do that by virtual machines in a resource group. Maybe you want to do it by tag or some other piece of metadata or an attribute that's associated with a resource. So you can totally go ahead and make that happen.
Yeah, I've used both of those. I use the shutdown a lot because for my VMs, usually I'm just manually turning them on when I need to go use something, and inevitably I forget to turn them off. So I just want them to go shut down at the end of the day. That email, like you said, is nice. I get an email, I think an hour before they're supposed to shut down, and it says, hey, your VM is going to shut down an hour. Are you still using it? And it has, I think it's three links where I can say, no, keep it on for another hour, 2 hours, or 3 hours. Something like that. So even if I'm on my phone, I can open up the email, just click the link, and it goes and keeps it on for a little bit longer. Like you said, I know there's some blog articles out there. I'll try to take one up for the show notes where people have done what you said. They use REST, they use Slack, and it's just a simple thumbs up to keep it on, a thumbs down to shut it off, stuff like that. And then those Azure Automation runbooks, I think they're all graphical PowerShell workflows too. So super easy to configure. Even if you've never written PowerShell, don't be intimidated by these runbooks and Azure Automation. Really easy to understand. Very simple to go in, configure, set up, get running on. And like you said, the 500 minutes in Azure Automation that's free, you can shut a VMs or multiple VMs down, turn them on a lot with 500 minutes of runtime, because these runbooks are only running for probably a few seconds when they're going to start VMs, shut down VMs. So I'm with you. Definitely go check out those runbooks. Look at what's already built in if all you need is to shut a bunch of VMs down. All of this is really easy to configure, easy to understand. again, going back to our other podcast, Scott, technology isn't hard. It's just knowing that it's there and going in and leveraging it.
The other thing that I should mention is we are talking about doing stop and deallocation. So there's kind of a difference between stopping a VM, you know, to maybe just going into the OS and shutting it down and staying on the hypervisor. You'll still be charged for that. So we are talking about full deallocates. So that means, you know, if you have public IPs and they're dynamic, they'll be different, or they have the potential to be different the next time your VM is turned on, things like that. It might take a couple of extra seconds for it to turn on because it has to find a hypervisor in the data center that's available. All that good kind of stuff. So I'll make sure in the show notes that we have kind of guidance around VM states as well, so that people can get a handle on that. But effectively, this is shutting VMs down to save money.
Yes, absolutely.
Mover is a cloud migration company that specializes in moving your company's files from file servers or cloud storage like Box, Dropbox, and Google into Office 365. Their patented technology makes Mover the fastest OneDrive file migrator in the world. Moving dozens of terabytes of data a day is a breeze. Use Mover's free, industry-leading migration guides or ask for a managed migration and they'll take the lead. With Mover, all your data is secure and intact. Running completely behind the scenes, you don't lose time, money, or hair while you transfer. Scan, plan, migrate, report. Migrations that don't suck with Mover. Visit mover.io for more info.
I'm going to switch up from what we have in our notes here. I'm going to switch the order on you because another one of those, kind of with the whole switching on, turning off, maybe turning VMs on once a month, only when you need them. You can also do things with scaling VMs. So not necessarily using the Azure automation or the runbooks or the auto startup, auto shutdown to turn them on and off, but use auto scaling to scale out additional VMs or scale down the number of VMs you use to handle a certain process. Maybe this is a certain time of year, Black Friday, when everybody's hitting your website. Maybe it is April 15 if you're related to taxes and everybody's trying to get their taxes filed. There's that ability to add and remove capacity in VMs, leveraging things like VM scale sets.
I just want to make the distinction. So we're talking about horizontal scale here, horizontal elasticity, not scale up or scale down, which is a little bit different. But this is kind of just pure auto scale constructs. And auto scale is built into, again, the kind of API plane or the ARM plane all over the place. So this concept of auto scale comes certainly with VM scale sets. You can also do auto scaling in manual ways, maybe through something like an alert firing off a piece of automation inside of Azure Monitor. Or if you think about some of the PaaS services, because they all use compute as well, something like an Azure web app, having that little instance slider. When you're adding instances, you're adding compute, like more computers, just more kind of horizontal scale behind things. So for virtual machines specifically, usually what happens is you end up with at least two VMs in a scale set or in kind of an HA pair. Maybe they sit behind a load balancer or like some kind of ADC, like an application delivery controller, something like that. Like you said, you need to go ahead and burst based either on timing or based on a metric, you know, like percent CPU consumed, disk queue length is getting to something too big, right? We need to just add more stuff here. So you either use VM scale sets or you kind of roll your own automation through, like I said, alerts or something like that to go ahead and have that elasticity and have things come up as needed. I think the thing you need to account for, and I usually talk to people like, hey, we're moving at the speed of the cloud here. What I mean by that is it's faster than it is on-prem in the sense that, you know, for me to go order a new server from Dell or HP or something, my lead time could be weeks, if not months, if not up to a year by the time I do procurement internally and everything else. So that certainly has its own speed and its own cadence. But when we move at the speed of the cloud, you know, stuff is not always instantaneous. So it takes a couple minutes to start a VM. And if you think about like a VM and a VM scale set, if it's coming up from a marketplace image, not only does the virtual machine need to start and come into the load balancer and all those kinds of things, you also need to deploy your application on top of the virtual machine. So it could take, you know, where it maybe takes like 3 to 5 minutes for that VM to start up normally, just as a marketplace image. Maybe it actually takes like 10 or 15 minutes to start up when it is in a scale set and it has to deploy your application on top of it. So you need to account for that and kind of account for that startup time or a little bit of the penalty that comes with maybe a performance there as workloads come online. So one of the mistakes I see folks make is, let's do a simple example. So we have two web servers today, and we know at our maximum that we need to go to 5. So I know at my max, I need to go to 5. But that means that I could run anything between 2 to 3 to 4 to 5. So lots of folks, when they start out and they scale, they say, okay, I'm at 2, and I figured out my CPU rule or whatever my metric is to do auto scale. And they scale by 1 unit. So they go ahead and they add number 3. And then they go ahead and they add number 4 when they need it. And then they go ahead and add number 5. But they forget that there's all this additional time to bootstrap their application and that kind of time penalty that comes with it. So usually you're better off with auto scale to go ahead and say, rather than going from 2 to 3 to 4 to 5, let's go from 2 to 5 immediately. Like, let's go to the place we think we need to be in maybe like a semi worst case scenario based on our telemetry and how we understand our application to work. And then if we don't really need 5, let's step back quicker than we would. So that way you get to start everything up. And if you need it, it's there and it's available. And if you don't really need it, well, then okay, we can go ahead and dial it back if we need to. And it helps kind of control some of that. It makes that elasticity a little bit smoother. And it's not so much of like a rubber band that is always snapping back on you.
Yeah, definitely. And that's good advice, because it is very easy to think, oh, it's the cloud, it'll be ready immediately, I just have to turn it on and I'll be good to go. You still have to build in for that time. But then kind of bringing this back to that whole aspect of saving money, optimizing your cost, is using that example of the 2 servers and the 5 servers, like you said, if you know you're going to have to be at 5 servers for that peak workload, if you're still on-prem, you're having to purchase all of that hardware, have it just sitting there doing nothing for maybe 11 months of the year. Just for that 1 month, you have to have that extra capacity so that everything doesn't go down. So now you're paying for hardware, you're paying for resources, you're paying for all that stuff on-prem and not using it for 11 months of the year, where now, because you have this auto scale functionality, you don't have to pay for those additional 3 servers for those 11 months. You're just paying for those for the 1 month you're using them. So sometimes when people get into costs, and I've had these discussions, they look at servers, they look at how expensive they are. They're like, well, yeah, but I can get them cheaper on-prem. And it's not always, what is that actual cost per server? But what is the actual cost for the amount of time that server is going to be on? You're paying cheaper for a server on-prem, but you're only using it 1 month. It may be cheaper because you're paying on that per minute or just based on usage in Azure to, even though the server itself is more, you're paying less because you're not using it for more than a month or maybe only 2 months. So with that auto scale, that price may change month to month, but your overall yearly cost may be cheaper because you aren't paying for those resources for 11 months of the year.
Remember, I said cost-conscious culture, right? And making sure that that's aligned. And that's exactly what you're talking about there, is, you know, making sure you understand the best bang for your buck, where it's going to be appropriate to run that workload. And for things that are up 24/7, you know what? You might be shocked at the cost of the cloud when you see it. Like, you'd be like, oh my gosh, it's going to cost me $600, $1,000 to run my VM every month. Like, yeah, it is. And then you go back and you go to your IT department and you're like, and they go, wow, we'll give it to you for $300. There's no way they're doing that right, right? But by the time they actually do the TCO and they figure out all the HVAC and the salaries and the people and the time to have that guy walk behind all the racks with a heat gun and who walks up to the KVM switches and maintains the routers and all the physical security and all the other things, there's just really isn't a comparison. But it's really hard to do those kind of true TCOs. But if you do start to understand kind of that cost benefit, like you said, to being able to go into not even just being in a pure cloud solution, but maybe bursting into a cloud solution. Like if you do like batch processing, say you do like HPC, like if you do like HPC pack in Windows, that has native support to burst into compute in Azure through Azure Batch. So you can totally have your HPC cluster running on-prem, and then when you do need more compute, you just burst into Azure and have it run through. So you don't even need to be in the cloud all the time, right, to have that stuff work and come together for you.
Yeah, so one other topic around saving money and VMs and scaling we wanted to touch on today was, we talked about originally the whole switching on and off, and then talked about scaling out. But you also have that concept of scaling up a VM. You were just talking about bursting, which ties in nicely to one of the types of VMs, but actually making sure you're choosing the right type of VM. So there's multiple types or multiple series of VMs in Azure, whether it's a burstable one or one that's optimized for video or RAM or CPU or just a generic one. So you have all those multiple series, but then within these series, you have different sizes of VMs where it's different amounts of memory, different amounts of CPU cores, different limits around drive performance, around IOPS and throughput. So not only being able to scale VMs out across multiple VMs or turn VMs off and on, but being able to actually even change the sizes of these VMs on the fly, but also making that initial decision to choose the right type of VM. Don't go out and buy a GS5 for $3,000 a month when all you need is a A1 for, I don't know, they're like $20 a month or something. So make sure you choose that right one, knowing that you have the ability to change the essentially the specifications on your VM on the fly as you go along.
It's a good point. So right sizing kind of comes in a couple different forms. Like we might scale up, like you said. Scale up is always going to cost us more money because we're consuming more compute, and that's the most expensive thing. Scale down is an option. And you can also go back and forth, maybe, like you said, as workloads are maybe more transient. One of the things you run into is if you do happen to scale up into a new instance size. So say you go from like a D2 to a D4, you have the ability to maybe attach more data disks in a larger series. So, you know, you do have to watch out for size specific features, like maybe the number of NICs, number of data disks, and make sure you don't over allocate from sizes you might want to step back down to later. The other thing you need to do is when you resize VMs in Azure, it is a deallocation because you have to back off the hypervisor you're on, and then you have to go into a new host and a new hypervisor. So it is a full restart, and it's a full kind of warm you back up kind of event along the way. So it is certainly something to keep in mind. And like I said, you can automate that as well, right? We've got Azure Automation and a bunch of other things. So, you know, you've got that process that runs at the end of the month. You want to burst it up. Go ahead and burst it up or scale it up rather than maybe doing burstable compute.
Yep. Opsgility is disrupting cloud training as we know it with their on-demand platform, SkillMeUp. Their new design focuses on a user flow to better support role-based learning paths with these great new features. Real-time, hands-on labs are now included with each subscription to build your skills competence. Hundreds of cloud courses with more added daily to transform your skills for today's cloud-first careers. Role-based learning paths guide you through associated level courses in an easy-to-view layout and tracker. Microsoft Azure and Microsoft 365 certification prep courses and labs to support you leading up to exam day. Learn more and start your free 3-day trial at www.skillmeup.com. The other one that I have noticed that people have to be careful of is if you think you need high performance disks, making sure you choose the S series for the support of SSDs versus choosing a series that only supports the standard hard drives. It's kind of a goofy one because if you look at it, you'll see like the DS, we'll use DS3 for example versus D3. They are both the same price for that core VM. Just because it's the S series that supports SSDs, it doesn't mean you can't attach a normal drive to it. It doesn't mean you have to use the solid state drives. It just means that it supports the solid state drives. If you do like a normal D series that only supports the standard drives, you're not going to be able to go in and attach those SSDs if you do need that extra drive performance. So generally, my rule of thumb is it doesn't make any sense to stand up one that doesn't support SSDs. Just stand that one up. If you don't need the extra performance, attach a normal standard drive to it. But at least then you have the option to scale up to add SSDs down the road if you need that performance later, sometime down the road in the future.
Or even just the ability to maybe mix and match within that too is kind of core to that scenario. So you might want your OS disk to be on an SSD and, you know, have your IO on disk be better there. But maybe you just write a bunch of like text logs to disk. That can be slower. So if you're on those S series, it doesn't mean you have to use SSDs. It just means, like you said, you can mix and match and kind of get into the appropriate workload or appropriate work set from there.
Yep. And Microsoft does have some good guidance around just generally what their thought is for these different VMs, general purpose versus compute optimized, memory optimized, storage, GPU, high performance, all of those. So we'll put some links in the show notes to just some of those links around sizing for those VMs, making sure you choose the right size, you understand the target workload Microsoft is thinking of when they create these different series of VMs, because that can help you. You don't want to pick a GPU-focused VM if you're doing something like running SQL on it for a SharePoint farm. So we'll put some of those links in the show notes, but this is another big one. Again, because the pricing too for those VMs differs so much from the low-end ones to the high-end ones, really understanding what your workload is doing, what resources it needs, that minimum number of resources it needs to choose that right series and that right cost for your VM can make a difference of literally thousands of dollars a month in your cost. Not choosing a VM that is bigger or beefier than you actually need for your workload or isn't even appropriate for the workload you want to run on it.
And the other thing too, you can think of with VMs, just it's not just the size and series, it's also where you run them. So if we think about like cost conscious culture and cost controls, if you're doing business in the US and Europe, there's going to be certain data centers in the US that are cheaper than others just because, you know, power costs less, it costs less for, you know, resource in the data center, things like that. So that cost is passed on to us as customers in the platform. So even if you're in maybe regions that are close to each other, like over here on the East Coast in the US, we have East US and we have East US 2, it costs different amounts to run your virtual machines in those data centers. So when you sit and maybe do your planning for Azure, you're thinking about connectivity and a bunch of other things, you know, you might have it in your head that you really want to be in East US 2, but maybe East US is the better thing for some instances or some stuff that you want to run. Same thing happens in Europe, right? You want to be in North Europe, West Europe, you know, you want to be in the UK, you don't do I go to UK South, to go over here. Japan has got a couple regions inside it. So you can definitely allocate and look at things that way as well. And you kind of have to be flexible, right? You can't walk in with the mindset of like, no, I'm only going to run my stuff in this one place, because the reality is the stuff you really want to run may or may not be in that one place.
Right. And Microsoft has a good network. Just because I'm down in Florida doesn't mean that I need to run all my stuff in East. I could run it in Central. I could run it in West. Maybe I'll see a couple millisecond delay because it has to travel an extra couple thousand miles or so. But the network is fast. It's robust. Unless you're doing something where a millisecond of time is going to make a big difference. Just because you're in the West doesn't mean you have to run in the West data centers. Because I'm in East doesn't mean I can't run in Central. Have some flexibility there. Sometimes maybe it may even depend on where your customers are. Maybe you're in the US, but 90% of your customers are over in Europe and you want to put stuff in the Europe data centers. Same thing. Maybe you're a European company with customers in the US, you put them in the US data centers. There's not going to be a massive delay or penalty for running it in a data center that's a little bit further away from you than another one.
We could go down a rabbit hole, right, of all the different services and things that we could potentially add on to go ahead and maybe save a little bit of money in there.
We have more podcast episodes to do, Scott. We have to save something for a future one.
We should probably start saving things then, since we're coming up on our time for this one.
All right, sounds good. Saving topics, saving money. We're just all into savings.
Yes, yes, yes.
All right. Well, thanks, Scott. Go enjoy the rest of your Friday. Safe travels home. You're out. I don't think you're ever at home anymore.
I'll be home for a couple weeks after this one. I signed up for just a little bit of travel, but I got to get back for our boot camp.
Yes, we do have boot camp. This episode will actually come out 2 days before boot camp. So if you're anywhere in the U.S., look for a Global Azure Bootcamp on the Saturday after this episode comes out and go learn more about Azure. We have one here in Jacksonville. I know there's two or three more in Florida, but I think there's like 240 of them now or something worldwide.
There's a huge number worldwide. Free community event. Highly recommend anybody go and check that one out for sure.
Yes. We'll put a link in the show notes to the main website for it where you can go find the location closest to you. All right. And with that, we'll call it a wrap.
Absolutely. Thanks, Ben.
Thanks, Scott. Talk to you later.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.